It's 8 o'clock. This is KBNF Regional News for Tuesday, March 3rd. I'm Patricia Naft. The remains of Kelly Mae Myers, an 18-year-old girl from Grand Junction, were found last Saturday in the Cactus Park area of Mesa County. Myers' last known contact was with her family last December and was reported missing soon after. The county coroner's office is still investigating the cause of death. The sheriff's department is treating the case right now as a suspicious death. In the missing persons report filed in December, it was noted that Myers was possibly hitchhiking to Salt Lake City. It's been looking a lot more like winter recently, but the recent snow is a mixed blessing. KBNF's Jake Ryan has more.
The western slope and all of Colorado has been hit by some much-appreciated winter weather. The past few days have seen snow and cooler temperatures, something that was lacking in recent weeks. With that snow, though, comes some danger. Local electrical utilities have been fighting outages. Roads have been icy. Late Sunday night, an avalanche closed Red Mountain Pass. The whole state is seeing heightened avalanche danger. Ethan Davis is with the Colorado Avalanche Information Center. He says that this new snow is triggering a lot of activity.
Essentially, we have received a substantial amount of snow in the last 4 to 5 days now, and we're just starting to reach the tipping point of what the snowpack can handle. So we've seen several large to very large avalanches, and by that we mean plenty large enough to bury, injure, or kill a person, and even on up to the size that could clear out small stands of trees or even a small house if it were to be in the way. So very destructive and powerful avalanches.
He says part of the reason is how fast the snow has come down. But another big reason for the high danger is how long it's been since the last big snow.
We had kind of a dry December and January with a lull in the snow. And that allowed the snow to just kind of sit there and rot, essentially. And once you cap that rotting snow with a lot of stress, and in this case just the sheer weight of the amount of snow that we're adding to the existing snowpack, and also how quickly it's being added, are kind of key components of why the avalanche danger is so elevated.
Right now, the danger in the Grand Mesa is high, 4 out of 5 on their scale, with an avalanche watch. In the Gunnison area and down in the San Juans, the danger is also high, but with an avalanche warning. On the center's website, those areas are flashing red. Davis and the Avalanche Information Center warn that those areas are very dangerous and advise against any travel in avalanche-prone areas, basically anywhere with a slope of greater than 30 degrees, or anywhere underneath that. He does say, though, that as time goes on, the threat of avalanche will drop and that things should look much better by the end of the week. For KVNF, I'm Jake Ryan.
The Denver Post has published an article stating that a lot of the land around oil and gas wells isn't being restored after the wells shut down. There are over 47,000 inactive wells in Colorado, and about half of them haven't had the surrounding land restored. Of that half, a large majority have sat unrestored for over 5 years. Colorado requires oil and gas companies to restore the land after they're done with the well, but there's no timeline in place for how soon that has to happen. It can also get tricky when owners shut down a well temporarily in hopes, for example, of waiting out low gas prices. There's also the cases of abandoned wells whose owners can't be located, so-called orphaned wells. The Post reports that Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is considering implementing new rules to combat the lagging restoration efforts, including making developers have a restoration plan before they start drilling. And finally, as part of our weekly Capital Conversation series, Benta Berkland talks to State House reporters about the next steps for oil and gas legislation this session. Many lawmakers are waiting on recommendations from the governor's oil and gas task force before introducing bills. The task force recently proposed 9 recommendations, but did not vote to give local communities more control over oil and gas drilling.
Joining us, we have Ivan Moreno, a reporter with the Associated Press, and Peter Marcus with the Durango Herald. Peter, I know you covered many of the task force meetings. Just give a quick overview of the final recommendations, or a few of them.
Yeah, so the recommendation stopped short of getting to full-on local control. What they did was some sort of steps in that direction, beefed up local liaison support for the COGCC, dealt with some local concerns such as truck traffic on local roads, beefing up staff for the COGCC, things that folks in local communities were concerned about. It was sort of a step in the direction of addressing the local needs, but stopped short of giving the local jurisdictions actual control.
And Ivan, a lot of people who oppose fracking in communities where they have concerns, they felt like this committee didn't go far enough because it didn't give governments veto power. What are we going to see moving forward at the state legislature? And then there's also talk about anti-fracking ballot initiatives going before voters in 2016.
First of all, as far as what we'll see at the state legislature, I think it's a little too soon to say. We still have a few months left in the session, but I think it's a pretty safe bet that you're going to see lawmakers from both sides, mainly probably Democrats who have been more vocal about wanting to have more local control over this activity, that they may propose some legislation there. But, I mean, it's going to be a challenge because at the end of the day, Republicans still control the Senate, and they have said repeatedly that they don't really see that there is a need for more regulation. And as far as the ballot initiatives, again, I think it's a pretty safe bet that we're going to see people who were disappointed with what the task force recommended try to go to the ballot again and see if maybe they could enact giving local governments more control and kind of fill the gaps that they see that the task force didn't cover.
I think it's important to also point out the tenacity of the anti-fracking crowd. I mean, we keep talking about U.S. Representative Jared Polis and his funding the initiatives with or without Polis's money, these so-called fractivists are going to be going to the ballot. I mean, they announced a coalition led by Food and Water Watch and other environmental groups even before the task force had voted. They were going around the last task force meeting handing out press releases and holding a rally before the task force had even voted because they, in their heads, the task force was predetermined to be a failure on their part. So no matter what, we'll be seeing this, and of course the politics will all follow.
The fact that the task force had a diverse group and they could not come to a conclusion on local control, or they did not support more local control, does that help opponents, you know, people from the oil and gas industry?
I wouldn't necessarily say that it helps either side. I think it just keeps the intensity level on this issue going. And the challenge I think that the task force had, aside from its diverse makeup, was they had to agree with two-thirds vote to agree on recommendations. Again, given how diverse the group was, that's pretty challenging to get two-thirds to agree on something. And that's, I think, part of the reason why you didn't see very aggressive or substantial recommendations.
Thanks. That was Ivan Moreno with the Associated Press, Peter Marcus with the Durango Herald. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver, and you've been listening to Capital Conversation.
Stay tuned for Chase with the Tuesday Morning Music Mix. For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.